How to clean your gear after a match, deciding on a bullet, and dialing can't into your chassis this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to another Mail Call Mondays, and this Monday, our first question comes from Cameron, and Cameron asks, how do you clean your gear bags after a match, specifically a rifle bag that won't fit in a washing machine? My bag's filthy from the Guardian match. I've just let air out, but I'm not sure how to actually clean the mud off the bottom of it. Well, Cameron, there are a couple of ways that you can take care of this. The easiest way, I think, is just go to a spray car wash, take your gear out there, lay it out in the bay, and just hose it down with the power washer, and then go take it back home, hang it up in the backyard or on a railing or somewhere, and just let it air dry. We don't want to do anything to increase the speed of drying because that can damage nylon. So just air dry in the sun usually works the best. And that I find is the easiest way to clean the gear, clean it thoroughly, and not damage household appliances. You really don't want to take gear bags in that and try to jam them in a washing machine because you can run into balance issues. Depending upon how soiled the items are, you can get a lot of grit and other nastiness in your washing machine. So you really don't want to do that. You can just use a basin of water out in the backyard, a kid's pool, something like that, and use a handheld scrub brush. But for me, that's a lot of effort. And for the couple of coins that you drop into a coin-operated car wash, just to use that power sprayer, that's great. Now, if you do have a power washer at home, then there's nothing to say that you can't throw that stuff in your driveway and use a power washer at home. Just make sure you get it cleaned out so that you're not using any detergents, anything that you don't actually want on those gear bags. And I generally don't use any kind of detergent when I'm doing it. I just spray it down with water, and that usually gets it clean enough. The key, though, is getting that stuff laid out and getting it dried out as soon as possible. During matches, when we have rain and mud and all that, I will usually take our gear back into the hotel room and spread it out even between days, even if I know it's going to get soaked the next day. I'll probably spread things out and allow them to start that drying process and get that air circulating around them so you don't start to get mildew and other nastiness growing inside your bags. But the spray car wash I found is just really the easiest way to go about it. Our next question comes from Ryan. Ryan asks, deciding on a bullet, lighter and faster or heavier and higher BC? Currently deciding between a 123 grain ELDM and a 130 grain ELDM for my 6.5 Grendel. Range is almost equal for the velocity I can push. 123 drops a fair bit less. 130 is about 10% better on wind. Thoughts on the standard versus heavy for caliber? Well, Ryan, given the opportunity, I will always go with whatever has the least wind drift and the best accuracy. So really, accuracy comes first, but let's assume the 123 and the 130 shoot equivalent accuracy, and we're talking about 100-yard groups, short-range accuracy in the gun. If both of those shoot equivalent accuracy, then choose the one that has the least wind drift. We don't so much worry about drop when we are talking about pushing at a higher velocity. Higher velocity and lighter weight bullets will usually have less drop than the heavier grain bullet. Heavier grain bullet, we just can't push as fast, so it has a longer time of flight, and so it is dropping more throughout that distance. So go for the best wind drift. Now, it can be tricky if you're just modeling a bunch of different bullets to try to figure out how fast you can push a certain bullet through your rifle to get an appropriate muzzle velocity to compare the two. So generally what you're going to end up having to do is once you settle on a couple of possible candidates, then buy a 100-round box of each and then go out and load a ladder test with those and see where you start to run into pressure, come down a little bit from that pressure sign, and then use that velocity to compare the two. You can guesstimate by what other shooters are getting. You can guesstimate by plugging stuff into quick load and seeing where the pressure levels hit on the two, and then go from there. But really, there's nothing to beat actually taking it out, shooting a ladder test to get your velocity, and then plugging the numbers into a ballistic calculator from there and seeing what you get. Now, a good online ballistic calculator, for those of you guys that don't have a Kestrel or don't have something in your smartphone, is JBM Ballistics, and we'll leave a link to their website down below. You can go there. They have a huge catalog of bullets. You can punch in all kinds of different variables and see what your trajectory is. It's a really, really useful tool. You can even print out dope cards from there. They don't support us. We're not getting anything from the website, but as I was starting out, I just found that that was a very, very useful tool instead of going out and buying an expensive ballistic calculator. Now you can get ballistic calculators for most smartphones for very low price or free, but if you're doing it from a desktop computer, JBM Ballistics is a good option. And our last question comes from Daniel. Daniel asks, when setting up my MPA chassis, I leveled the scope to the receiver, but when I got behind the rifle and shouldered the rifle and had the level on the chassis leveled, the reticle was canted. Should I cant the butt pad to fit my shoulder better or align the reticle to vertical with the rifle comfortably in my pocket? Mainly used for target shooting, hunting, and some run and gun matches. Thanks for the help. Love the show. All right, Daniel, when we're talking about something like an MPA chassis that has the level built into the chassis system, then what you're going to want to do is lock your receiver into the chassis, actually mount the receiver with the scope on it into the chassis, tighten everything down. You're then going to want to level the scope to the level in the chassis. So you want to level the reticle to the level in the chassis. There are a couple of ways you can do this. If you have flat turrets on your scope that coincide accurately with the reticle, then you can just lay a level on top of the scope turret, and that will get you very, very close. If that's not the case, if you have something that prevents you from putting a level on there, or the reticle isn't actually level to the top of the turret, then a better way to do it is to take a carpenter's level out to a 100-yard target, draw a line on the 100-yard target with the carpenter's level, so a perfect vertical line on it, and then go back, level out the chassis, loosen the caps on your scope, and then rotate your scope until the vertical stadia lines up with that vertical line and the level in the chassis is level, and then tighten everything back down and then double check again. You can do it at closer ranges, I just find, because of the parallax adjustment on the scope and that, it's easier to do it on a 100-yard target. Another way to do it is to just use a plumb bob tied from a limb or tied from a fence post or something of that nature, something that is going to give you a straight up and down line. Now, I actually, here in the shop, on one of the walls here, I have a perfectly level cross drawn on the wall so that I can level up scopes if they will adjust the parallax short enough that I can get that distance. But you will want to level the scope reticle to the level in the chassis. Now, once you have all that done, if you shoulder the rifle, get your natural point of aim, and notice that you do have a cant with the natural point of aim, that's when you start adjusting your butt pad to dial that cant out. So when you naturally shoulder the rifle, there is no cant. The disadvantage of this is when you do that on your strong side, now when you switch to your support side, as you will on some stages, that butt pad is going to be canted the wrong direction. Usually the butt pad will be canted in a little bit for the right-hand side. It will be canted the opposite direction for the left-hand side. Now, I can't recall right offhand how the cant is set up on the MPA chassis, but you should be able to mark that one way and then be able to shift it to the other way if you need to shoot support side. And that's it for questions for this Mail Call Mondays. Now we have a couple of things to talk about. You'll notice the pretty blue boxes that I have sitting here. After the debacle that was the Guardian match for me, I went ahead and as soon as we came back, ordered 200 rounds of Lapua 6.5 Creedmoor Small Rifle Primer Brass. So these are the SRP brass. They do take small rifle primers, whereas the Hornady that I was shooting took regular large rifle primers. This caused me to run into another problem. I usually load my ammunition with Lee dies. Well, the Lee dies, the decapping pin that is in the full-length sizing die, which is what I generally use to resize brass for the Mach 10, That decapping die is too large for the 0.059-inch flash hole that is in the Lapua brass. This caused me, of course, to fire an email off to Lee Customer Service and ask, hey, can I get a mandrel that has a smaller diameter decapping pin? Because in the Lee dies, the decapping pin is a part of the mandrel. The mandrel is just turned down smaller so that it can go through the flash hole and decap. It's not a removable pin like some of the other dies have. So I got a rather curious reply from Lee. They, of course, stated that they didn't have a smaller decapping pin. And for whatever reason, I'm usually pretty good about reading the fact, the frequently asked questions on a manufacturer's website before I fire an email off to them. I just figured that it's due diligence to save me time and save customer service time. But for some reason, I missed the FAQ on their site that specifically covered this. The customer service representative, after a couple of emails, was kind enough to guide me to it. But the response that we got from Lee is that they recommend just drilling out the flash holes in the Lapua brass to accommodate their decapping stem. This doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. One of the purposes of these small rifle primers is to reduce the amount of pressure that is coming back on the firing pin cup, so that if you have a larger firing pin, the primer cup, if you have a larger firing pin, that prevents blowing holes in the primers. I would think that drilling out the flash hole to a larger diameter would then allow more pressure to flow back into that cup, and again, run into problems with piercing primers. Now, I haven't actually experimented with this. This is my first time running small rifle primer brass in the 6.5 Creedmoor, but I would assume that drilling out those flash holes is going to leave me with a lower threshold for pressure than if I leave them as stock. And to be quite honest, I'm not going to go through and drill out the flash holes in Lapua brass. It has 0.059-inch flash holes for a reason. I trust Lapua's engineers a little bit more than I trust customer service telling me to drill out my firing pin or my flash holes on the brass. So that was just kind of interesting. The other option, of course, they gave me is to chuck up the mandrel in a drill and polish down the decapping stem until it is small enough to go ahead and clear the flash hole in the brass and punch out those primers. But they do not recommend that because obviously when you file that down, you are weakening the pin, and they do talk about the chance of breaking the pin off. Now, it's kind of interesting to me because I am using this for precision rifle work. I'm not decapping range pickup brass. If you guys have ever decapped range pickup brass, you know occasionally you'll pick one up with, I believe it's Berdan primers, where if you try to decap those, you will break the decapping stem because there's not a hole in the center. There are three holes around the sides. So if you're not decapping range pickup brass, then it's not that big of a deal. You're not going to apply a ton of pressure to that pin to pop the primer out. So I think we're going to end up just polishing the stem down. Now, one thing that I did notice, just taking the dies and fitting the stem through the flash hole, is that the Lee Collet neck sizing dies, the pin is small enough that they will go through the flash holes in the Lapua brass. So I found that somewhat curious, and that was what actually prompted me to call them and ask if they had a smaller diameter pin. So just be aware of that if you use the Lee Ultimate die set and you are switching over to Lapua. Now, I know a lot of guys out there don't like Lee dies, but I have actually gotten really good quality results from reloading with those dies, so I've stuck with them and I just haven't upgraded. This may actually cause me to upgrade to something like the Redding full-length sizing dies, or Redding also has a die that does size the body, but it also utilizes a bushing to size the neck of the case. So we may look at some of those options for this setup. But for a semi-automatic rifle, when we start getting into all these crazy steps, I do like the fact that the simplicity with the full-length sizing die is just that I run the brass through, it resizes, we're good to go. But then again, the flip side is I do want to get the most life out of the Lapua brass as possible, because each one of these cases actually costs more than some loaded ammo. So you definitely want to make it last as long as possible. So that is the current state of affairs on the Lapua Brass. Now, when I go to switch over to this, I am going to have to do a quick ladder test, drop down about 10%, maybe a little bit more, and then work back up because I believe the Lapua Brass has a slightly smaller case capacity, so that will increase pressures a little bit. We are still in a very moderate pressure range with the loads that I'm using in the Mach 10. So it wouldn't be that big of a problem, but best practices is always when you change a component to drop down, work back up to check for pressure, and then go from there. So that's what we'll do, and we'll come back and we will talk about the process for loading the Lapua Brass and how it works in the Mach 10 in another episode. So if you got any questions about that, please go ahead and drop them down below. And I also want to know, what do you guys think about Lee's customer service recommendation that I drill out the flash holes in the Lapua Brass? I just found it kind of odd. Definitely not something I'm going to do, but that is their standard recommendation on how to solve that problem. And they actually claim that drilling out the firing pin holes or the flash holes will give you better consistency. Traditionally, the flash holes in Lapua Brass are very consistent to begin with, so I seriously doubt that there's any accuracy gain to be had by drilling out the flash holes. But I really want to hear what you guys have to say about it. So go ahead and drop me some comments down below. Now let's talk about this thing that I've got sitting in front of me here. Now this is our 300 Win Mag Remington 700 long range project in the Modular Driven Technologies ESS chassis. And this is a really great overall system. Obviously, Modular Driven Technologies is a sponsor of the show, but I don't have this sitting up here to talk about the chassis. I have it sitting up here to talk about this thing that I have on the fore end of the chassis. Now, this is a product from Accuracy Solutions, and it is called the Bipod X. This is actually their TAC 3 model, and we talked to Accuracy Solutions at the SHOT Show, and we finally got one of their models in to give a try, and it is really an interesting setup. Now, we have it here on the 300 Win Mag because the system is really more designed for longer range platforms, although it can be used on anything all the way down to a 14.5-inch carbine if you really wanted to. But the really neat thing about it is it pushes this front axis that our bipod is on way out ahead of the muzzle. And it's difficult because of my space concerns here on the table. But I can show you guys real quick. I just loosen a throw lever that is here on the back side of this, and I can extend this beyond the muzzle and lock it down. And now, here we go. We've got the bipod pushed out past the muzzle. The other reason why I wanted to run this on the 300 Win Mag is, of course, we've got a big nasty break on the side here, and I want to see what kind of powder burns or anything that we get down here on the actual device itself. Now, it really shouldn't be a concern because I don't kick up a lot of stuff off the ground with this brake. It tends to be more venting out to the side, but again, it's just some curiosity. Now, you notice how far out we have this right now. The bipod axis is actually even with the muzzle, but that was only the first stage of this setup. I actually have a second stage here that I can release and really, really push this guy out. And I can't actually get the pistol grip of the rifle on the table with it that far out, but it really is kind of an interesting setup. Now, there is one other thing that's cool about this deal is that if you have a bipod that does not have any cant to it, if it is just, say, for instance, you're using a Harris that is one of the cheaper versions that doesn't have any cant, I know you probably would not do that with this system. But if you were using a bipod with no cant on it, you can't just release the throw lever on the bipod X, and that will allow you to cant the rifle to dial out any cant in the terrain. And then when you lock it down, you're locked down tight again. It also has a bubble level sit here on the back that you can set to either side. And you can adjust that independent of the device itself. So you can get your chassis leveled out with it on here and then adjust the bubble level to where it's plumb. And then you have another indicator to make sure that the rifle is leveled out. Now, this is set up with throw levers, so if we're in a situation where we don't need this, I can very quickly grab throw levers, pop it off, grab the other end here, take my bipod off, snap my bipod back on here, and then this can collapse down and go into its included carry case. Zip everything up, and this has got MOLLE attachment points, so you can attach it on the side of your pack. So if you're going into a situation where you need that, you can unzip it and put it on the rifle really quick. Now, I absolutely realize that this is not a product for everybody, but it was something really interesting because the geometry of it appears solid. You know, if you push this axis further out ahead of the muzzle, then the movement at the buttstock of the rifle is going to have less impact on where the weapon is pointed. So if I'm holding the rifle already as tightly as I can hold the rifle and as perfectly on target as I possibly can with a short distance between the bipod and my shoulder, then I'm going to have a certain amount of wobble area on target. We as humans can never dial all of the wobble area out, and that's why bench rest shooters shoot from vices and all kinds of other fixtures. If you are actually touching the rifle with your body, there is a certain amount of vibration, a certain amount of wobble that you will induce into the system. Now, when we push that bipod out, we're lessening that amount. So if you're already putting as little input as you possibly can into the system, when you push this bipod out, you are lessening that. That is just simple geometry. So on that, it is a very sound idea. So for longer range rigs where you're going to be mainly shooting prone, where you're going to be shooting from solid positions, it definitely has some merit. What I really want to do is I want to get out and shoot off some barricades, off of some more improvised field positions, and see how well the system works overall. I may even drop this thing into a tripod and shoot off a tripod with it extended and see how much more accurate I can get with the setup like that versus having the tripod clamped right underneath the forend like I would normally do. So it's kind of an experiment for me, but I really appreciate Accuracy Solutions sending this out to us to play with, and I am looking forward to beating it around. But I really want to hear what you guys have to say about it. We got some interesting comments on our SHOT Show video. What do you think about this kind of setup on a long-range rifle like the 300 Win Mag or like a 338 Lapua or something of that nature? And what do you think about it on something more like a 6.5 Creedmoor competition rifle? I really want to hear your opinion on it. What kind of questions do you have about it? Is this something that you would see a need for in your type of field shooting? So let me know down in the comment section below. And that's about it for this Mail Call Mondays. If you guys have any questions or comments over anything that we've covered this week, please leave them in the comment section below or send it to us on Facebook or Twitter. If you're listening to us on your favorite podcast app and you'd like to send us a question, you can reach us at 8541tactical@gmail.com. If you like the show, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And until next time, get out and shoot.